Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Murabi Hangouts.
Good morning, folks. Kent Hovind here, Dinosaur Adventure Land. How high was the IQ test? 91. A little slow down here in Alabama. Sorry.
Good morning, Kent. Well,
It's good to be back, okay? I'm here to help.
amazing. Absolutely amazing.
We should do an entire Hammurabi hangout. You having you interviewing Kent.
We can do that. We can absolutely do
Cannot believe I just signed myself up for
that. People will be very excited.
Will they though?
I think so. They usually are.
Mark's like, all right, I'm out.
You will have fun.
Well, how are you, my
So,
dear?
I'm okay. I'm tired. Yeah, I feel like that's my stock response anytime anyone asks me. I'm just tired.
I think you could just respond with five kids.
Yeah, just a picture of the twins. I am this. How are you?
Love how much they get a kick out of me saying, llama, llama, daddy pajama.
They do think that's pretty funny. It is pretty funny.
Is it? Well, there you go.
How are you today?
I am there are oddly many people out here this morning driving, which is strange and vexing. Also, it's a little
Yeah.
rainy, which
It is,
is
yeah.
like bleh, like that.
Before we get further in, we did ask people last week to comment if they did in fact listen to this.
That's right.
So I wanted to say hello to Mark, who I think we name check most episodes. Sorry, Mark. John listens. Hello, John, Doreen, and Alan.
Oh,
Thank you
cool.
guys very much. We do appreciate it. Joining
I
us
guess we
from
do.
early morning ramble that hopefully contains something useful or interesting. But it's nice to know it's not just us speaking into the void. It's not really the void because it's just us chatting to each other. But you know, there is a void potential, I feel.
You know how we do.
You're silly.
That's true.
So you actually had something to talk about. You were talking to someone yesterday about being a
Yes.
biblical scholar and what that actually means. And why you're not one.
Yeah. So I don't know if I've ever talked about this here, so I apologize if I have. So, for anybody that doesn't know, I got my bachelor's degree from a very conservative university, Liberty University, and it was a bachelor's in religion. And then I went on and got a pretty hefty master's degree. It was a master's in theology, and it was a 6-year full-time degree. Ended up being 126 semester hours at the graduate level. So, it was the big master's degree. It's like a research master's degree. So it's sort of advertised. But I took 6 years of Greek, 6 years of Hebrew. I taught Hebrew at the graduate level for 2 years of those six. Like while I was taking really advanced courses, I was teaching the intro to grammar and the intro to Hebrew readings courses. And anyway, so the point is that I learned Hebrew and Greek very, very well. And then I ended up taking Biblical Arabic, and then I took a separate course in Targumic Aramaic, and then I took a semester of Akkadian, and I studied some Ugaritic, some Syriac, So, like, I was clearly on my way to doing like Semitic Bible, like focusing on the Hebrew Bible. And at the end of that, but that was also at a very conservative school, a fundamentalist school. So at the end of that, spoke to one of my professors, and actually he spoke to me, and he said, you know, there aren't many people that really enjoy this in the way that you enjoy it. So notice it didn't have much to do with my brains, right?
I think that's implied.
is it though? But he said you should really consider doing a PhD. And so I was sort of so I at first applied to Baltimore Hebrew University, and which is a smaller school. I had done an Ulpan there, which is like a adult education in modern Hebrew course, just to try to get a, I wanted a place where I could speak Hebrew to people that could speak it back to me. And I met Barry Gitlin, who was the president up there, and I approached him and said, listen, I'd like to apply to be one of your students. He was an archaeologist, biblical archaeologist. And it was quite fortuitous. I didn't realize it at the time, but he said, we're actually in a transition period where we're essentially being subsumed by Towson State University. So legally, I can't take any more students right now. So he said, I'm really sorry, we'd love to have you, but I can't take any more students. He said, I would, if I were you, I would apply to Johns Hopkins. Which sounded kind of crazy to me. I think the way that I always say this is like, yeah, and I'll also apply to the astronaut program, which I have just as much of a chance as getting into.
You want to be an astronaut, though, so.
True, but I mean, you know, from a parallel standpoint, it's like I have just as good of a shot of getting into the space program as I do into getting to Johns Hopkins. But when I applied to Hopkins, there were sort of like two paths that I could potentially two majors that I could apply to potentially and pick one. One was Hebrew Bible, and the other was Assyriology. Which, by the way, no matter how much I try to emphasize the Assyriology, people still call me a Assyriologist, which is just fine with me. I mean, it makes sense. And I decided for a number of reasons, but I just, one of the reasons that I decided to become or to go into the Assyriology program, because I thought, as a conservative evangelical Christian, I already had Hebrew Bible down. So like why would I, what's a good analogy? Yeah, like let's say you're doing Olympic weightlifting and you've spent a whole bunch of time learning how to do the snatch. People don't know there's the snatch and there's the clean and jerk. And let's say you've spent all this time learning how to do the snatch. Now you've been doing it yourself, right? You've been watching YouTube videos. This is actually a really good analogy, I think. You've been watching YouTube videos and, you know, like recording yourself and watching yourself do it and like making all these little adjustments. And so you've gotten really good over the past several years of doing the snatch. And you have the opportunity to work with like a trainer. Like this opportunity comes up to work with a professional trainer who like specializes in Olympic weightlifting. And he says, or she says, like you could, I can only work with you on one of the lifts. Which one do you want to do? Like, which one do you want me to teach you? You might think to yourself, well, gosh, I already know how to do the snatch. So I should learn how to do the clean and jerk. The problem is that you can kind of have this, you can kind of have this sense that you already know how to do the snatch, right? But if anybody's ever been in this situation, it is really probably, again, I always forget the specific definition of this, but like it probably is a version of the Dunning-Kruger syndrome. Because you think, I already know everything there is to know about doing the snatch. Yeah, I could keep like fine-tuning it and building up my strength and but there are likely some fundamental things that you just don't that if you haven't been professionally trained and what to look for in doing the snatch, like you just won't get it, right? So there are actually huge improvements that you can make working with somebody who's done this at the professional level, and you just don't realize it. That's sort of how it is, but even more pronounced in these situations. So, like, I thought, well, I know Hebrew and other Semitic languages really well. So all I'm going to do is just more of the same at the PhD level. And while I might, it'll be great to get practice and all that stuff. Like I already know it. When in reality, the language itself is but a component. Because there's this, and I would say probably the bigger side of the field, things like how did these texts come together? What's the archaeological background? What's the historical background? What's the tradition historical or the document? Like what's the formation? How do these texts come together? How were they edited? There's this whole field of inquiry that, as a fundamentalist, I just didn't engage with. Now I kind of knew a little bit about it, albeit not very well at all, even like what it was in reality. But I knew that it was hooey because like I knew Moses wrote this thing in, like the 15th century. And I knew that if I wanted to know what the historical background was to it, I just re needed to read the pages, like read the words on the pages. And since I knew how to do that in the original, like if I wanted to know what happened, I just go read it. That's all you got to do. Because it's the inspired and errant word of God. So like this idea of, is it written? Of course, I didn't even know about this stuff, but like, is it written during the exile? Is it written in the post-exilic period? Which parts are written in the Hellenistic period? Like all this stuff, like any of it, anything that I knew about that, I thought it's all liberal scholarship. So it's irrelevant, because it's just wrong. And so I had no training at all in the historical critical method. None. I just knew how to read Hebrew really, really well. And in some ways, I probably knew how to read Hebrew better than some of my colleagues. And that gave me an even greater false sense of security, right? Or mastery. Because I'm like, oh my God, like I can read this as well as any of them. So that even, that bolstered, you know, my thought, I need to, like, I made the right decision because I already know how to do this. When in reality, they were light years ahead of me because they were engaging with the actual scholarship in the field. So that means that, and I still think I'm in a very fortunate position. And here's why. When I got out with my Assyriology degree, I had to, like I took Hebrew language courses and I took Hebrew, like Hebrew, like Palestinian archaeology courses. And I did, you know, go to like symposiums and stuff that talked about, you know, is there Deuteronomistic history? You know, so there was some some level of engagement. But like I didn't have to take a comprehensive exam in the formation of the Pentateuch. Like I didn't have to do those things because it wasn't required. My minor in Hebrew Bible was primarily language focused. And so when I got out, it was like, oh my gosh, there is this whole world of biblical scholarship that I have yet to engage with. And so there's been this huge learning curve for me. Now, I say that I'm fortunate because I learned how to do that research. And I learned who the scholars are in the field. And I learned like where to find, you know, and how to sort of wade through those sources in a meaningful way, in an effective way. And so, you know, that puts me, you know, way down the road. And of course, because I know the languages very well, the arguments are a lot easier to grasp because like I can sit there and read what it is that they're talking about. But the point is, like, I'm writing this chapter now on the formation of the Pentateuch, and I'm having to essentially go back through on my own and do the coursework that I would have had to do had I, you know, had I done this at the doctoral level. And of course, even though I think I'm in a better position than someone just coming and trying to study it on their own, because I have all this, you know, sort of research acumen or whatever, it's still not, you know, doing it in the classroom with the specialist. So I sort of have to supplement my work with going and talking to the Joel Badens and the Conrad Schmidts, you know, of the world and say like, hey, am I getting this? So all of that to say, and then I'll be quiet. Thank you for letting me ramble on for so long. All of that to say this, when people introduce me as, you know, this is Dr. Joshua Bowen, he's an Assyriologist and a Hebrew Bible scholar, like, sort of, right? I did minor in Hebrew Bible. I do have a master's in theology. So there's a certain part of the field that I do have mastery of. But it's more the philological side of the game. So if you say to me like, hey, we need to know what this word means, or, you know, how should we understand the grammar of this, but yeah, I'm your guy. I can definitely do that. But, you know, when questions come up like, hey, what's the, how should we understand Joshua 24? You know, as far as, you know, it's in its place in the formation of the Pentateuch, or what do you think about the Yahwist source? You know, those are questions that I'm like, I'm learning, right? And so I'm going to direct you to a specialist. So the upshot is when someone calls me a Hebrew Bible scholar, I'm usually very quick to say, well, I'm an Assyriologist. I minored in Hebrew Bible. I'm a philologist. Depending on what you're looking for, sure. But the reality is that the major part of the field, that is all of the other stuff that's not just linguistic, I'm not a specialist in. And I think it would do it's a disservice to the field and to those people that, like the Dan McClellans and the Kip Davises, and like the people that had to actually go and engage with this stuff. You know, or the William Reeds, I'm just trying to think of other Hebrew Bible specialists, the Francescas, the Bracopoulos, you know, like people that had to go and engage with the critical scholarship. I think it's unfair to them for me to allow somebody to say, like, I'm a Hebrew Bible specialist without really caveating that in a meaningful way. So I don't know. Did that make sense?
It did. And it was a good description of how you ended up where you did.
Hooray. But it's why you are just so amazing and gorgeous. But it's why I love doing like this every other Thursday thing with Kip, because that is absolutely my wheelhouse, right? And that was the big advantage. Sorry, I said I was going to be quiet. Now just keep there. But like that was the big advantage of what I did, is that because we all thought that this other part of the field was just a bunch of hooey. We were like, well, where are we going to spend our time? Well, we're going to spend it doing philology and text criticism. And we're going to learn to sight read Hebrew. So now, like, we're getting ready to start Jeremiah, reading through Jeremiah. And like, I read the first like two or three chapters of Jeremiah sort of on the fly the other day. And it just... But it's a nice feeling that there's at least one advantage to being an idiot.
I think many people would dispute your self-identification as of idiot.
Well, I mean, it's all right that they're wrong, you know. But I learned to read language. So honestly, If I had to pick between doing as much philology as I did and doing less philology and more of the text critical, historical critical stuff, and then having to come back and like shore up my linguistic side, I probably would take what I did over the other. That was really clunky how I said that, because I feel like it's easier to pick up the historical critical stuff, for me anyway, than to pick up the linguistic side, philological side. So I guess that's a good thing. But anyway, sorry.
You're very interesting. I like listening to you talk.
That is incredibly generous of you. Thank you.
Very true. And I was thinking if I had anything to share this morning. I don't really think I do. I sent out the February newsletter yesterday, which was fun to write. I enjoy doing those, which has a nice list of upcoming bits and pieces. We've got a couple of interviews this month, which will be fun. But
who are we interviewing?
That's a good question. We are interviewing... I'm pulling up the newsletter now because I didn't want to get names wrong. We are interviewing Dr. Tero Alstola from University of Helsinki. He works at the Center of Excellence in Ancient Near Eastern Empires. He does a lot of computer-aided research, which is really interesting stuff. And he's going to be talking about his work, but also about an upcoming conference. It's the 69th Rencontre. I can never pronounce the whole thing. Rencontre Assyriologique Internationale. Apologies for my appalling French accent, but that's the major European Assyriological Convention. And Helsinki's hosting it this year, so Dr. Tero is going to be talking about that. That's, I can't remember if I said March 14th and then March 21st. Christian Casey, doctor, he's an Egyptologist. I've interviewed him before a couple of times. Great guy. And a young man called Michael, who is a 16-year-old student of Christian's. They've written a book together called Be a Scribe, Working for a Better Life in Ancient Egypt. And it's kind of aimed at middle schoolers. Yeah. So I'm going to be talking to them about the book and scribal life in ancient Egypt. And their publicist is also offered to do a giveaway with us. So that's exciting.
You know, it's so sad is when you said that, I like flashed back to me being 16 and I thought 16-year-olds can't write. Then I went, wait a second. Yeah, I am not the standard by which 16-year-olds can
be measured. I mean, to be fair, I think very few 16-year-olds write books. Michael had Christian and Dr. Jen.
Right, but I mean, like,
also an Egyptologist helping.
So
high school
I'll tell
Josh
this story
wasn't overly
maybe one
interested
morning.
In academics.
Yeah, I was interested in Jesus. Yeah, my grandfather, I'll say this and then maybe I'll tell the story sometime. When I graduated with my master's in theology, my grandfather came to the graduation and we were standing, you know, off to the side afterwards. And he looked at me and said, I'm really proud of you. And I said, oh, thanks. And he said, I never would have guessed. Because I'd gotten into Hopkins by that point to do the PhD. And he said, I just never would have guessed that you would have done anything like this. Like, we were all anticipating that a good future for you. Like, we all expected you, at best, to be hanging off the back of a garb. That's what he said to me. I was like, oh. I mean, like... We need garbage men. Like, I think that's an important job. But I don't know that he meant it that way. So I guess having this sort of academic career path was not something they anticipated me having.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we might wrap up there then. I don't have anything. I will just give a very quick plug for Hit Points in History. which is an archaeo gaming conference that I'm organizing in conjunction with the Ozymandias Project people. We ran it last year and we're running it again this year. And it's March 9th through 10th. And if you don't know what archaeo gaming is, obviously this is probably the best conference for you to attend. It's not aimed at academics. It's kind of for everyone who's interested in history, computer games, and the intersection of those two things, which honestly, they're my two loves, my two non-person loves, given that I am currently talking to my husband. I should have phrased that better. Sorry, Josh, I love you more than games and history.
I mean, you can say that, but I know better. It's okay.
No.
I know my place. I have accepted it, and it's okay. I'll take you however I can get you.
I love you. But Lexi, I do reading party with Lexi El, who's been on Digital Hammurabi several times. She used to do the Assyriology Today segment, and I are presenting a session focused on the Dark Pictures anthology game House of Ashes, which is a horror video game, which is set in an ancient Mesopotamian temple and has as its background quite a lot of Mesopotamian lore, mythology. It name checks the Curse of Akkad, which was really cool.
Wow.
So we'll be talking about that. And if you're interested, there's more information on the Hit Points and History website, which is hitpointscon.com. I think there's a list of some of the sessions and you can buy tickets and stuff like that. But it will be fun. And that's, did I say the date? I don't remember. It's March 9th and 10th. Yeah. Okay. I did say that. Okay. Amazing. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Josh. I love you.
I love you.
We'll see you all later.